listening to IDEA, the podcast about improving data engagement and advocacy. I'm Brianna Wham.
And I'm Shannon Sheridan. In our episodes, we'll be bringing you interviews from real-world data professionals who are engaging their researchers in new and novel ways.
We'll also be reviewing the literature and keeping you up to date on what's getting published that's worth a read, or in your case, a listen.
We hope you'll join us as we talk with our colleagues and see what's working, or what's not, in the wider world of research data management.
Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of IDEA. Thanks for joining us today. This month, we've got another article review hot off the presses that we're looking forward to going over. And it's a good one, I think, and I think Brianna would agree. She's nodding through the Zoom. But it's pretty exciting because today we are pitting policy compliance against the reality of research and what it means to have a data management plan that actually informs and helps your project and is not just another administrative burden.
Exactly. And so today we're going to be looking at the article, Data Management Planning for an 8-Institution Multi-Year Research Project, authored by Kristen Briney, Abigail Dobin, and Kyle M.L. Jones.
So you might be wondering, why did we select this article? Of course, we're going to tell you, because we tell you every month why we pick the articles that we do. And so this article caught our eye because basically what they do is describe how a research team utilized really comprehensive data management planning to structure their work on a multi-year research project that involved 8 different institutions, multiple phases, and pretty obviously, many researchers who were working with the data.
Yeah. So if you can imagine, this is a really great example of a really complex research project that might be similar to some that you're helping researchers with at your own institutions. And so just to add on to what Shannon was saying is we selected this article because it presents that thorough example of an actual research team's process, creating and utilizing data management plans to both improve the rigor of their research overall, as well as the efficiency of their work, which can be really complicated when you have collaborators and distributed across the country at different institutions, et cetera. And so this article is especially interesting because it's not only creating a demonstration with the article itself of how data management plans can be beneficially used and utilized as a tool to help the research process, but it also provides concrete examples of data management plans for a specific project, which these authors actually highlighted in their article. That's just beginning to happen. People sharing data management plans publicly as examples in the scholarly record.
And also, it doesn't hurt our selection criteria that these data management plans were really impressive and beautiful and caused a lot of envy in my librarian heart. So let's get started with the synopsis, Brianna.
So this article starts by giving a brief literature review. Things most listeners will be aware of, like how are data management plans being used and that they're increasingly being required by funders in a specific, very specific format, that 2-page, typically at least here in the US data management plan. And it also looks at, in this literature review, researchers' perceptions of data management plans. Are they actually using them? Are they finding them to be a burden? That kind of discussion, and the value of data management plans outside of funding decisions. So this all gets at that beginning bit Shannon was mentioning, that juxtaposition between policy, actual utility by the researchers, and then the utility of the data management plan itself.
So yeah, the lit review was really helpful. I think it gave a pretty concise history of data management plans and an overview of their impact on research. I would say for curation professionals, probably nothing new, more of just a nice wrap up to set the stage for the work that they were doing. But really the meat of the article was focused on the development and the content of the 4 data management plans that were actually used throughout the course of research. So they had 1 data management plan that was the one they submitted for funding. And that one was the one that adhered to what most people think of when they think of a data management plan. That 2-page gets submitted along with the grant, make sure to tick all of the boxes for what they're asking for, saying what you're going to do with the data, how it's going to be stored, made available, things like that. The other 3, however, that they talked about were the more expanded data management plans that actually helped guide what was happening with the research. So things like file naming conventions, responsibilities, project workflows, and talked a little bit about what content went into it. We don't want to reiterate their entire article here on air, so highly recommend that you go and take a look at what they were including. But in addition to some of that practical, you know, what did they focus on? What did they include? They also highlighted these three key features for how data management plans can be useful outside of simply a document in a grant application. And this really seemed, Brianna, to underlie a lot of the work that they were doing on their own data management plans, because I think there is that reality of like, how useful can a two-page document be when you're trying to grant plan for an entire like multi-year, multi-institution project?
Exactly, Shannon. I think you hit the nail on the head with a lot of that, is that not only were they showing the fact that there is utility in kind of taking that two-page data management plan and making it into something that's actually implementable, actionable, with these three other phased data management plans, which I think that itself is a really great example for us as data professionals to use with researchers, kind of, and in the work that we do, and seeing what is that difference, that change history between what's happening in your two-page data management plan, and then that conversion to this kind of implementable, actionable data management plan that can then be used by members of the team to, as I said, make their work more rigorous and efficient.
Yeah, exactly. And so those three features that they talked about were, first, data management plans as a living document, which I think I can speak for both of us when I say that that is a stock phrase that I know I use a lot. When I'm talking to researchers or others in the profession.
Yeah, I do have a quick question for you, because I'm curious what you and our listeners think. Is I also use that phrase all the time. And I do wonder every once in a while if that phrase is as understood by researchers, by what we mean by a living document. And so I think, again, this article does a really nice job of explaining they expect things to change in their research process as things go on. And so they need these documents to be flexible, updatable, changeable, a living document.
Yeah. And I like to think that when I'm using that phrase with researchers, I'm explaining why I'm using it. So I'm not just saying, oh, it's a living document and then moving on. It's like, no, it's a living document because things are going to change as you're working on research, as you go through the process. But I do think it is a little bit more of a mindset almost, because, and I think this article is a really great example, it's one thing to write the data management plan for policy, and it's another then to look at that plan and say, okay, this needs to transform into something that's actually going to guide my research. Mm-hmm. And I think we're starting to see that transition with a lot of researchers, but I don't think it's, I would say it's probably not even the majority of researchers yet. I think the DMP is still very much a grant application checkbox, and then people occasionally look at it afterwards, maybe. I do think it's telling that at least two of the authors on this paper are librarians, and it was a library-based research project. So I think it's people that are already aware of this conversation and of the value and benefits of data management plans in their work.
Yeah. So it is showing the kind of best case scenario based off of that expertise. But I do think you're right that there is starting to be some of that shift, and I think mindset around a data management plan can be seen as a protocol, which experimental protocols get updated all the time based off of something doesn't work, you try a different method, but it's documented. And so that same mindset can be applied to data management plans as living documents.
There you go. Yeah. And then finally, their last key feature was the idea of data management plans as a coordination tool between collaborators at different locations, which we kind of already touched on. But this was one of the last features that they highlighted for how these data management plans can live and thrive and change outside of a grant application.
Yeah. And this paper did also then, kind of going from those key highlights, they didn't only touch on the kind of things that went well. They did discuss the challenges that occurred throughout their project and in this application of kind of data management plans. And some of the challenges that they discussed, similar to many research projects that many of us have worked on over the past few years, the first one was COVID, how that impacted their timeline and their workflow. Another challenge they ran into was that the institution where they were using the main storage option, which at this time was Box, had a migration of all storage from Box at that institution to an IRB-approved Google Drive. And as you can imagine, these different storage platforms utilize different hierarchies, folder structures, et cetera. And so, well, that was a challenge because it changed their organization of their folders and things. Actually, because they had good data management, file naming strategies, it made that migration much easier.
And then finally, one of the things that Brianna mentioned earlier is that their data management plans are actually also published and publicly available on OSF. We will have the links to that in the show notes, along with, as always, the link to the article. But I thought this was great. I mean, you don't see a lot of people actually publishing their data management plans, despite the fact that we know everybody has to write at least the two pager. And so making them publicly available, I think sets a really great example of what they can look like, the idea that they can be made publicly available without too much extra effort, and that it helps other researchers down the road. They're also just really nice. So for example, the one I have open here has the file naming conventions all laid out. And this is great for multiple reasons. Obviously, it's helpful for the researchers when they're doing the work to have these documented somewhere. And it also makes their work a little bit easier, not only in the workflow portion, but now, like, I'm thinking if they ever needed to make readmes for the data, like, their file naming convention documentation is already done. And it also is in a place that other researchers on the project are going to know to go access it. So if you have a new postdoc join, or somebody else needs to get trained on doing portions of the data cleaning or quality assurance, you know, you have all of that information already documented in one concise place. I can't tell you how many times I've been working on projects, even my own projects. And it's like, okay, where did I document this particular thing or this particular workflow? And especially when you're working with a lot of people at multiple institutions, it's a lot to keep track of. And this just kind of makes it a little bit easier. So we both loved, I think, that they made these publicly available.
Definitely. And I think just adding to your points there about kind of the availability and the ways that these are useful is, I think, thinking as a data professional in ways I could potentially use this in my own work is, I think, not only, as we've said, is it a good example of how do you take your two-page DMP from a grant proposal and transform that into something that can be used to coordinate collaborators from various institutions, make sure everybody's on the same page, and have everything documented for when the project is completed, what was actually done, because they also mentioned these were those living documents that were updated. But on top of that, the information that's used and displayed in these data management plans are really great examples of researchers actually doing this. So when I teach file naming conventions, I can show a real-world example from this research project of what their documentation of their file naming conventions was and then how they implemented that.
Yeah. And even outside, you know, the actual practices that they're using on the project, I very frequently hear the cry of, wouldn't it be great if we had more examples of data management plans available out there? I know I've heard this come up around the new NIH requirements that are going into effect next year, but even for other funders like NSF or DOE, there's no requirement to make those data management plans publicly available. And it's really hard for researchers, though, if they haven't had experience writing one in the past, to say, okay, but what exactly does this look like for this funder or my area of research? And I know there's an argument to be made for, like, the competitive side of it. Like, we don't want to give away our good data management plans. But if we're really going to buy into this, which I think we should, but buy into this idea of these federally funded research projects producing open results, then shouldn't the data management plan also be considered a part of that? Especially when it has important workflow information. But also, I just think it's only going to make people's practices better. And I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing.
I think it's also, as you said, a really great way is making this practice better, learning from each other. We did a survey at one point here at Penn State asking researchers about where they learn their data management practices. And it's primarily from each other. So at this point, I also think it's interesting seeing the kind of shift in this idea of making data management plans more openly available. I don't know, you've probably seen it, Shannon, but that like DMP tool is creating features where you can kind of then get DOIs for your data management plans and have them displayed on your ORCID, which is pretty cool. So really making it a scholarly product of your work, because it takes a lot of work to make a good data management plan.
Yeah, and we should be, I mean, it's the same argument for why we want researchers to make data publicly available so that they can be rewarded. I mean, I'm not going to argue that a data management plan is the same thing as like a publication or a data set, but it's still something that out there that maybe somebody will find useful and cite, or that you can point to and say, look at all of this work that we're doing in our lab to ensure that we're trying to follow funder requirements and things like that. And I think this is a really good example that data professionals can use as evidence when they're actively engaging with researchers to convince them to make this jump from policy document strictly done for a grant application to something that can actually be used. And I like to think that there is some kind of momentum for making that shift. I know at PNNL, I worked on a project where the grant had already been submitted, it had been granted, and they were starting to actually do the research. And so they had a data management plan. It was the standard 2-page documentation. And one of the things I worked on is part of a team with other data professionals, with researchers, was actually going through that data management plan, seeing what the project had promised to do, what they said they were going to do, whether it was with workflow or with publishing, who was going to be in charge of stuff, and actually teasing it apart to see what sort of policies and workflows the project needed to implement to actually follow that data management plan.
Yeah. I was going to say, Shannon, we similarly here at Penn State have worked to kind of create a Excel spreadsheet form for researchers that allows them to take that kind of 2-page data management plan and break it down into a quick and easy, here's what I said I was going to do for this section, but it's broken down much more discreetly. And we've found that to be pretty successful as a tool, both for, as you're saying, taking it into implementation, but also actually for thinking through what needs to go into the data management plan itself.
Right. Because I mean, when you think about it, the idea of the data management plan as a grant, part of the grant application, makes a lot of sense. It makes researchers think about where their data is coming from, how they might deal with it in the future. But when it comes to an actual implementable piece of documentation, there's a lot of limits on the 2-page DMP. The biggest one probably being that it's only 2 pages long, which makes a lot of sense because you don't want researchers to spend all of their time worrying about data management, like just as they're applying, and the reviewers, I'm sure, don't have time to review pages and pages of data management plans along with the expertise to do it. But what that means is you've got a really great high-level overview, I think, but not a lot of helpful day-to-day guidance. So, you know, we talk a lot about how great it is that researchers are now being required to do more of these 2-page DMPs, but I do think we have to be honest and say that there's some limitations to them too.
I think it's really similar, actually. You just made me think about this in terms of how things are written in grants is methods. Research methods are also briefly presented in grant proposals and their kind of narrative, usually statements. They're not sharing the protocols behind those methodologies. And so you could see a similar thing come forth with data management plans, as we saw in this paper, of you have the kind of synopsis of your data management plan description, and then you have the protocols that actually define what you're doing.
Yeah. And for those of our listeners who don't know, Brianna actually had a previous career as an entomologist and doing that bench science. So I would argue you're pretty familiar with the rest of the grant application and scientific process.
At least in that field, but yes.
And it seems to me that it's easier for people to be reviewed and to check if they're complying on like the terms and conditions of a grant when it's something like the protocols. But I think this is another limitation of data management plans is that right now there's not a good system in place to check if they're doing what they say they're going to be doing. And I mean, I keep coming back to the NIH one, and it's just because there's a lot of buzz about it since it's going to be starting here in a couple of months. But compliance and enforcement has definitely been a topic that people have talked about. Like, what do you check? How often do you check? Whose responsibility is it to check that a project is complying with what they said they were going to do in the data management plan? And not necessarily that a longer data management plan will help alleviate that, but it could be a step in the right direction, at least showing good faith effort. Like, we actually did write all of this down, and here are our plans and what we actually did with the data, that sort of thing.
Yes. And it'll be interesting to see in the future how future machine-actionable data management plans play into all of this. So future podcast topic when that comes around.
Future, right? Whenever yes. we actually get there.
Yeah, but we still have some questions for you, our listeners. So have any of you worked with research projects that used their two-page data management plan during project implementation? And if so, did they have to change it? Did they use it as it was? How did that work? And so following up on that, all of that, lots of questions for you. Have you worked with researchers to make their data management plans actionable or implementable?
As all of you are listening probably know, we are nearing the end of the semester. And so we're going to be taking off the month of December so that we can relax, recoup, deal with the giant backlog of work that comes as a result of the end of the semester. But IDEA and Brianna and I will be back in January with a brand new practitioner interview. So if you haven't, make sure to like and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, so that you can stay up to date and get notified when we are back to publishing in January.
So thank you for listening to us. And we hope that you take a look at this article. As Shannon said, we'll link the article itself as well as that OSF repository with their data management plans in the show notes. And we hope you all have a good rest of your day. And we will talk to you again in January.
Thanks for joining us, folks. We hope you enjoyed this episode of IDEA.
You can find the resources from today's show in the show notes.
Our theme music is by Scott Holmes, and a big thanks to the Research Data Alliance Interest Group, Engaging Researchers with Data, for supporting our work.
If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to rate or review us wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next time.